Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm John Hodge, joined as always by Jumbo Cheese. That's right, the J.C. Abbott out in Van City. J.C., how are you today?
I am doing excellent, John Hodge, and I'm glad to see that you're letting the skull cap breathe today. It needs the sun.
Well, I don't know about the sun because I burn very easily. And if any part of my head is going to burn, it's going to be the scalp. That being said, I got a fresh shave on it. I thought, you know what? I have a large collection of hats. I usually pick one out in the morning. Today, I said, you know what? It's time to let it go and give it a chance to breathe. It is July after all, as of tomorrow. I guess it's the last day of June recording this. So it is not too warm. Not too cold, rather, to let the head be bare. So why not let it out? Let it out of the cage.
Do you get somebody to shave it, or are you doing it old school in the mirror with like melodramatic music and like a straight just thinking about all the people who have wronged you in life?
I do it in the shower, and I do it entirely by touch. I just feel where there's hair, and I shave it off, baby. That's how I roll.
Just to be clear, I'm talking exclusively about your head here. Not
yeah, and I was commenting.
Habits.
I was commenting exclusively on my head as well. Yep, there's. We won't get into any other details about my showers for the sanity and sake of our listeners, shall we? We got lots to talk about, JC, so let's get into it. Today, we're discussing Brady Oliveira returning to practice with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
The Edmonton Elks being the CFL's last remaining winless team.
Pat McAfee's anger at the U.S. losing to Canada in flag football.
Bo Levi Mitchell reaching win number 100 for his career.
Corey Mace calling out his team's disciplinary issues.
And the CFL partnering with Drake. But first, the Saskatchewan Roughriders and Winnipeg Blue Bombers are the only two remaining undefeated teams in the CFL and now sit number 2 and number 1 respectively in Three Down Nation's power rankings. Hodge, which team will be the first to suffer a loss this season? And if they played head to head, which would you pick and why?
Let's start with the first question. I think it could be a while before either of these teams lose a game. And it is the CFL. Any team can lose any game. But when you look at the schedule, I mean, Saskatchewan's on a bye right now. They come back. They host Calgary. I like their chances of getting that win. They go on the road to BC. If Nathan Rourke plays, that maybe changes things up. But as of now, I like their chances of winning that game. Then they host Edmonton, and then they go to Montreal. And Montreal, after week 4, we'll get into it a little bit later, JC, but suddenly don't look nearly as unshakable as they did maybe amid their 3-0 start. Winnipeg, meanwhile, has a very strange schedule. They are at Calgary this week. Then they go on by. Then they host Calgary. Then they have a home-and-home with Toronto. And they visit Calgary again. That is right. for Winnipeg's next five games, they exclusively play two teams, and it is the Stampeders and the Argonauts. None of those teams are teams that are at the top of our power rankings right now. We've got Winnipeg 1, Saskatchewan 2, and Montreal 3. To me, I think the team that wins head-to-head is the team that's at home. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think Winnipeg right now is next to unbeatable at Princess Auto Stadium. I actually thought the Elks, we'll talk about them a little bit in the next segment, played pretty darn well on Thursday night when they came to Winnipeg. They just weren't able to close it out, get it done. But these two teams, I do think, JC, are very evenly matched. Brady Oliveira coming back, I think, helps Winnipeg a lot. Zach Kolaris had a marquee game. You know, the offensive line in Winnipeg's been very solid, better than last year, I think. The D-line's been very solid. Tony Jones flying around that linebacking core, the secondary causing knockdowns and breakups. They have allowed a few explosions, though, however. The Riders, meanwhile, the offensive line I was very concerned about following injuries to Sean McEwen, Philippe Gagnon, I think has found a winning formula with Jacob Brammer in at guard, with Travion Tate in at guard. And then defensively, we all know how well they swarmed the ball. And Mario Alford is turning the clock back with an unbelievable 2025 season so far. So there's not a lot to criticize about either of these clubs. I think you have to give a team credit anytime it wins without its starting quarterback. Not many teams in the CFL have been able to do it so far this year, but these are the two teams that have. Chris Streveler getting a win in week one for Winnipeg, and then Jake Bayer getting a win in week four for Saskatchewan. So these were the two top teams on my power rankings ballot. I did have Winnipeg 1, Saskatchewan 2, but I think it's very close.
I can't wait for Labor Day, because I think there's a not insignificant chance that we could see these two teams stay undefeated all the way until their first matchup, right? Like, these are two strong West Division squads. And really, when I'm looking at that schedule you laid out, Hodge, it isn't until that, what is it, week nine matchup with Montreal for Saskatchewan that I really look at it and say, that might be a game that they could let slip. Of course, BC could make a case if they've got Nathan Rourke back in the lineup. Anything can happen in the CFL, but I really like that schedule for Winnipeg that you laid out, especially with what it looks like Brady Oliveira returning to practice this week and hopefully being good to go either this week or next to return to that Bombers lineup and give them an additional boost offensively. And then everything that's going on with these two franchises, they're good teams, right? And they've done it through adversity, as you noted, with the backup quarterbacks. I mean, Saskatchewan's injury issues alone, I thought was going to knock them off track, but they have done an exceptional job of recovering from those. And frankly, they've done an exceptional job of covering for their own mistakes, because this is an extremely heavily penalized team right now, and it has yet to cost them a game. They've come close on a few. They've led opponents off the mat that they probably shouldn't have, but ultimately they've finished, and that's what matters. The Saskatchewan Roughriders are who I thought they would be before the season. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers are proving that they're still as good as they ever were.
Yeah, Brett Lawther scares me a little bit in Saskatchewan. In full credit to the native of Truro, Nova Scotia, he has been lights out after, right, some shaky starts in years past. So maybe Brett will do the same thing this year and he'll get it all figured out. And by the end of the year, we'll go, oh yeah, remember those couple games where Brett Lawther was way off, you know, missed some really makeable kicks. That being said, that is, I think, a legit criticism of the Riders at this point. Though you laid out the injuries, JC, and I think we should lay them out really quick. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a receiving core that's been very good, despite not having Sean Bain Jr., Kian Schaefer-Baker, and Sam Emelis for not all the season, but for a good chunk of the season. Bain is yet to play. Schaefer-Baker went out week one. Emelis has missed the last two. And yet, whether it's Keyshawn Johnson stepping up to make plays, whether it's Dante Meyer stepping up to make plays, Del Duncan Busby, his first touchdown, Joe Robustelli, a remarkable grab along the sideline this past week. Like, they have continued to step up. And again, AJ Ouellette, full credit to him, after, again, a shaky week one, he's now leading the league in rushing yards. So you got to give a lot of credit there. And their defense has always been good, right? They always know how to turn the ball over, make the most of those opportunities. Winnipeg, I think, has been close to beyond reproach at times this season. The two home games, week two and week four, I've been a little bit worried about lack of communication in the secondary. They've had some breakdowns there. I talked to Jamal Parker post-game. I talked to Evan Holm post-game. They both said, look, it was just miscommunication. We had multiple defenders on the same receiver, and that was what allowed Keon Julian Grant to get open. But should be noted, I was up on the press box. If Trey Ford sees Stephen Dunbar Jr. earlier, he had a touchdown in the first half that he just didn't see. And then we also had Keon Julian Grant in the back of the end zone dropping a touchdown at the end of the first half. So again, I think Edmonton played a lot better in that game than they did the first two games. Still wasn't enough to get the win. But regardless, to me, these are the two best teams in the CFL right now. They have both won a game without their starting quarterback, and that is, to me, what separates them from the Montreal Alouettes, a team that looked completely and utterly out of sync this past week. Very disappointing performance from them without Davis Alexander. I don't know what plagued McLeod Bethel-Thompson. We'll talk a little bit about that more later on in the show. But I do believe, JC, these are the two must-watch teams in the CFL right now. The Prairies is where it's at this point in time. For the record, these two teams would have to be 10-0 to both be undefeated for the Labor Day Classic. I don't think that's realistic. I think in the CFL, you're going to stub your toe at some point. But wouldn't that be something? A 10-0 v 10-0 Labor Day Classic. That would be amazing.
Manifest it now, Hodge. Don't be a negative Nelly over there and tell me it can't happen. I want to see it. Let's see it. No, I agree with you. It's probably a little unrealistic, but it would be quite something to watch. And kudos to those two backup quarterbacks, Chris Strevler for Winnipeg and Jake Mayer for Saskatchewan. They did the thing that backup quarterbacks have to do to win in this game, which is they didn't lose the game for their team, right? They didn't commit turnovers. They protected the football. I think Chris Strevler looked like a little bit more than that than Jake Mayer did in this last game, but both of them successfully executed the offense without making mistakes. They leaned on strong running games, and they made the throws that they ultimately had to, and we saw successful results, right? And that's all that being a backup quarterback is.
The Edmonton Elks are the CFL's only remaining winless team after the Hamilton Tiger Cats got a surprise win over the Montreal Alouettes, and the Toronto Argonauts beat the Red Blacks thanks to the borderline miraculous breakout of rookie defensive back Derek Sluka. JC, when will the Elks get their first win of the year?
Well, if you're a fan of Edmonton, you're saying it has to be this week, right? This is a moment where the Elks have to step up against a vulnerable Ottawa Red Blacks team on Sunday. You know, pending the health status of Drew Brown, we don't know yet if he's going to practice this week, how much he's going to practice this week. But if Dustin Crum or Matthew Schiltz, whoever Ottawa has as their backup, is the one starting this game, I think the Red Blacks are very vulnerable. And with what the Elks did last week, taking a large step forward in my mind in terms of their execution level on offense in particular, I think there's the potential for them to win this game. And they need to prove that this experiment with Trey Ford, with all the work that they did in the offseason, all those moves that we praised them for, are going to ultimately work. If you don't win this week, well, you're going to BC, or you're having BC come to you. Let's not forget that BC knocked the socks off of them in the opening game of the season, and presumably Nathan Rourke will be back for that game. Then you're on bye. Then you've got Saskatchewan, which should probably on paper be a loss based on how good the Riders have looked. And then Hamilton in week 9, potentially that is an opportunity for them to get a win again. But again, the Ticats looked a lot better this week than they had in the past. Perhaps they have turned the corner. So nothing can be taken for granted. I think if you're the Edmonton Elks, this week is circled with a big red marker on your calendar, because you know it is critical to get fans back in stands and to prove your proof of concept to win against the Red Blacks.
Yeah, if there was ever a week 5 must win, it is this one. And I was very critical of the Elks after their first two games. Specifically, I was very critical of Trey Ford. This is a team that has been at least 5-point underdogs for all of their games this year, and they've yet to even cover a spread. Unfortunately for them, that was also true week 4 in Winnipeg. That being said, again, I genuinely thought this team showed a lot of positive signs in that loss. It was by far and away Trey Ford's best game. He did not put the ball in harm's way. He was patient in the pocket. He was not overly reliant on his legs. He has to do a better job, I think, of recognizing when he can and can't escape. The Bombers were double spying him on a number of plays. We saw it once with Kyrie Wilson to one side of the field. We saw it another time with Tony Jones to the other side of the field. He tried to get the edge and could not, took a couple of big sacks. That being said, I thought the defense controlled the line of scrimmage for a good chunk of that game, not allowing anything from Quentin Cooley, not allowing anything from Matthew Peterson. And then special teams-wise, I thought there was a lot to like here from the Elks as well. They got a turnover right on the muff punt from Trey Vavil. Granted, that's maybe more of a Trey Vavil problem than it is a positive sign for the Elks. But Vincent Blanchard, who's been a bit of an adventure for the Elks kicking-wise so far this season, was great. 3 for 3, averaging 73 yards on kickoffs. You'll certainly take that. So I think there are positive signs here for the Edmonton Elks. It just obviously was not enough to get it done. I mean, going into Princess Auto Stadium, that's probably going to be your toughest matchup of the season when you take the team into consideration, the atmosphere, all that. If they play this well, I think they beat the Ottawa Redblacks in week 5 at home. I certainly think they beat them if Drew Brown does not play. Wouldn't that be bad timing for the Elks, though, if Drew Brown does play? Let's not forget Drew Brown, over 400 yards in the season opener at Saskatchewan, a game he darn near won. 31-26 was the final score. To me, if you're the Elks, yeah, this is basically a must-win. They have 2 home games back-to-back here. They've got Ottawa week 5, BC week 6. If you win both of those, you are right in the West Division, right at 2-3. You're probably not catching Winnipeg or Saskatchewan, but I don't think anybody realistically expected Edmonton to finish above Winnipeg or Saskatchewan in the standings this season. I think everybody thought, okay, if Edmonton's going to bank the playoffs, it'll be as that 3 seed. And I think their fans, by the way, would be more than happy to see this team make the playoffs as a 3 seed. You've got to make hay when you've got a chance to beat the BC Lions in week 6. We should remember this team already lost to BC once this year. There is a third matchup, so the point differential doesn't necessarily matter, but you got to get this win in week 6. You want that season series to be at least up for grabs until the end of the year when you play BC for a third time in week 20. Ottawa, BC, these are the 2 matchups that'll make or break Edmonton's season. If you fall to 0-5, having lost the season series to the Lions, I'm sorry. Even in the CFL, where almost anything can happen, you're probably looking at 2026, and there is zero appetite for fans in the city, formerly known as the City of Champions, to wait around for a team to try to figure it out after they haven't made the playoffs in years and years and years.
That's the biggest thing to me, Hodge, is the fan element, right? Can this team potentially overcome an 0-5 start and make the playoffs? I mean, we've seen it happen in the CFL before. It's not impossible, right? But can they overcome an 0-5 start and have anybody watch game 6? Maybe not, based on what it looks like in Commonwealth Stadium. And this has been a persistent problem for the last number of years as this franchise has declined. And clearly, people are taking a wait-and-see approach despite all the optimism that was pumped in to the fan base this offseason with all the moves that were made and the changes at the top of the organization. They're not buying it yet because they haven't seen it on the field. And in those first 2 losses in particular, it looked really, really terrible. I thought, to your point, the loss against Winnipeg, much better, a step forward in all phases. But ultimately, you need the W, and you need to play exciting football if you want butts back in that ginormous stadium. This is a critical issue for the Edmonton Elks and for the health of that franchise long term, because you know Larry Thompson's got a bunch of cash. He took over that organization, but it's not limitless, right? There's got to be returns, and there's got to be progress. And we've got to show that this organization can recapture some of its former glory on the field, not just in allusions to old names and all the other things that they're doing around that organization. They have to prove that they can actually win. and they haven't done that yet.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Red Blacks, the team that the Elks will be facing this week. Ottawa, yeah, it's easy to clown them for losing against the Argonauts, but that defense I thought was very good. Yeah, Nick Arbuckle made a few plays, fair enough, but they only generated 289 yards of offense, and one of that was with an Ottawa Red Blacks defensive back quite literally throwing the ball into DeMonte Coxey's hands for his largest gain of the afternoon. Like, it was an almost comedy of errors type game. Like, the Red Blacks lost because they gave up the blocked missed field goal return. They gave up Dustin Crum had the interception in the end zone following the blocked kick. Defensively, Ottawa was very good against the run. Ottawa's offensive line, I thought, provided some nice rushing lanes for Daniel Adebooye. I thought the offensive line was putrid in its pass protection of Dustin Crum. I wouldn't have wanted to be Dustin Crum's mom or dad watching that game. He was running for his life often, which is a big problem. That being said, the Red Blacks are a team that have been very banged up the last few weeks, and they're also a team that I think is expecting a lot of key players back over the next little bit. No, and Alonzo Dye will not be back this year. They've made that clear. Nick Martner, same thing. But when you look at the guys who are short-term injured, right, who could realistically play week five, week six, you've got Zach Pelios, who's going to be a big upgrade at right tackle. You've got, of course, Drew Brown. We've talked about him. You've got Sam Carson, who's arguably an upgrade at center, their second-round pick this year. You've got DeAndre Lamont, veteran defensive back who can slot it to multiple places. Aiden John, really good rotational pass rusher. Lucas Cormier, who's developed into a really good special teamer. Like, there are so many guys who are impact players who I believe Adrian Fry, another one, corner, who's looked really good the first few weeks of the season. None of these guys are out long term. It's like Ottawa just has to hold on for a little bit here to get these reinforcements back. So that'll be interesting to watch. Is the preparation for week five, how healthy can the Red Blacks get? How quickly can they get some of these guys back on the field? Because if they're all coming back week five, that can make life really tough for Edmonton. If the Elks get lucky, a lot of these guys will be out for another week.
I'm still really high on the Ottawa Red Blacks. They were my preseason pick to win the Grey Cup, and I'm still going to stand by that because I think they can turn it around. To me, it's not about all the injuries and guys that they've got coming back. It's about the one injury, and that one injury is the quarterback position and Drew Brown. Will he be ready to go this week? And if he's not, Hodge, I wonder about your thoughts on this. Do we see Tyree Adams? Because the Ottawa Redblacks were really quick to pull the trigger and get or move Matthew Schiltz down the depth chart after one bad start in relief of Drew Brown. Dustin Crum got them the win in that terrible weather outing in Calgary, to his credit, but then looked like every other Dustin Crum game we've ever seen in this Legas loss. Do they go back to Schiltz, or do they go to the one guy who hasn't played yet, who they've been hanging on to for a number of years now? I think he's got, what, only one start under his belt and got hurt in that game. I believe that was a victory for Ottawa. Was it last year or 2 years ago now from Tyree Adams?
I believe it was 2023, and I believe he at TD Place beat the Chris Jones Edmonton Elks, like 26-7, I think.
So if you're going to hang on to him, maybe we see him this week if Drew Brown's not ready to go, and we complete the circuit of all the Ottawa Red Black quarterbacks starting a game. Honestly, I wouldn't hate that decision. It would certainly be interesting just to evaluate everything that you have. But really, this team needs Brown back under center to be able to reach their full potential. Through 4 weeks, five CFL teams have been forced to field a backup quarterback due to injury or suspension, causing some critics to wonder aloud if the CFL has a QB problem. Hodge, what do you make of the QB play in the CFL so far this season?
I mean, I think a lot of the starters have looked good. We've seen growth out of Trey Ford. Zach Kolaris just had a remark. He was okay week three. He was great week four. Trevor Harris, I thought, was shaky in his last outing, but was great to start the season. Vernon Adams Jr., the numbers are actually not pretty at all. Zero touchdowns, three picks, but I thought he's looked a lot better than those numbers would suggest. But by and large, no, This has not been a well quarterback season overall thus far. I think Jeremiah Masoli has left a lot to be desired in BC. I do not understand why they haven't given Chase Brice an opportunity with Masoli struggling. A game never comes down to just one play. Like, there's always more to it. But that pick six he threw right before halftime of that game in Saskatchewan was as much of a backbreaker as I think you could have in professional football. First of all, the play call was terrible. Why are you throwing the ball with, I think it was 20 seconds left? You're already in field goal range. The only play there is you have to throw it into the end zone or run the ball and just take your field goal. And I appreciate that. Yeah, a play call is a lot more complicated than simply having like what I'm saying is the play call doesn't dictate where the ball goes. Masoli theoretically had multiple options to throw into the end zone, decided to check it down. So I don't think the play call was good, but the execution was also not good. And that is a 10-point play, right? Because you're giving up a field goal that was essentially guaranteed. Sean White is money from inside 40, and you're giving up a touchdown the other way. And the Riders never relented on that momentum that was provided by that Tavon Campbell pick six. Kudos to Tavon Campbell, by the way, for making a nice play there. Jake Mayer, I thought the game result flattered him a little bit. Like, the Robustelli catch along the sideline was amazing. But if Jake Mayer just makes the basic throw and puts the ball out in front of him, that's an easy 80-some yard touchdown. He didn't make any big mistakes, which is all you can ask, but he also threw for like $170 in that game. $170 is generally not going to be good enough unless your defense is feasting on takeaways, which is what happened in that one. Nick Arbuckle, I thought, had his best game of the year in week four against Ottawa. I liked how he used his legs, but again, the production wasn't great. McLeod Bethel-Thompson, a guy who has led this league in passing yards previously, has led this league in passing touchdowns previously, has won a Grey Cup as a starter, all things that one would make you think, wow, this guy's a real player. And by the way, had really good numbers at Edmonton last year. I know didn't win a lot of games, but had some really good numbers. I was shocked at how bad he looked in that one. I don't know if you just chalk it up to rust, but Hamilton's defense struggled to start the year. I expected McLeod Bethel-Thompson to throw for 295 mm-hmm. yards, two touchdowns, and a pick. And his numbers were short of that. And I thought that on field, his play, if anything, was flattered by the numbers that he put up. It was not a strong performance, especially given how strong that supporting cast is in Montreal. So I don't know that the CFL has a quarterback problem. I will say this, JC. Something that long-term is a concern for me is how much money a lot of quarterbacks are making in college, right? With the NIL mm-hmm. money, if you make $1 million in college, I think there's a lot less incentive to come up to the CFL for 70,000-75,000 Canadian a year. The other thing that I think would potentially fix the CFL's quarterback problem is a solution that no one would ever actually enact, which I'll get into after you have a chance to chat, JC. But I'm interested to hear at least what our listeners think of my idea.
Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Now you've got me intrigued. You've thrown me off, Hodge, because all I'm going to be thinking about this entire segment is just what Hodge's devious plan is. But I think you hit the nail on the head in assessing these quarterbacks. I will disagree with you slightly on the Jeremiah Mazzoli situation in BC, only in that I don't think it was a bad play call in that situation, right? They had deep routes in that moment. There was, what, 13 seconds left on the clock. There was time for a couple of plays. The one thing you cannot do, the only thing you cannot do in that situation is throw it out wide to the flat late. Every CFL quarterback knows that. Every U Sport quarterback knows that. Every, you know, high school quarterback in this country knows that when they're playing CFL rules. And unfortunately, Jeremiah Mazzoli did that, right? He made a rookie error from a veteran player, and it went back the other way. And perhaps the more disturbing thing was not just that he made that error, but then he doubled down on that error because he made the same throw basically again on his third interception, which was picked off by Anton Brooks, who made a diving catch rather than one in stride that was able to be returned the other way. So that, I think, is a serious issue. What I want to address in terms of this quarterback situation is why they're going down, and put some, let's say, some water on the fire that I see on social media every single day, Hodge, which is that somehow this is the fault of bad Canadian offensive linemen, right? You see that a lot of different places. Eddie Steele, I think, recently just tweeted this out, not to single him out. He's not the only one, but it's a common refrain from fans. And I just don't think that's the case in any of these situations. You'll have to refresh me on the situation around the injury to Drew Brown, because I don't quite remember the details of that hit and who was responsible for the pressure. But in most of these circumstances, I mean, you've got a pre-existing injury in Chad Kelly. You've got a suspension in Zach Caleros. That's not on the offensive lineman. The hit that injured Trevor Harris was a late shot. It was an illegal play, and therefore I'm not blaming the offensive line for that. And when you look at the injury to Nathan Rourke, yeah, he was getting mobbed for that entire game, and there was lots of pressure in his face. But BC was starting four Americans on the offensive line in that game. It had nothing to do with their Canadian players on that particular occasion. So I think this is a sloppy narrative in terms of explaining away why we're getting these QB play or QB injuries. I think in general, we're just an older QB league right now for some of the reasons you laid out in terms of the difficulty of getting players up here. Some of that is the early wave of this NIL effect. Some of that is the presence of other leagues down south. But I think the CFL as a whole is going to have to reevaluate how they evaluate the QB position, because for a long time, right, this league was able to feast over good quarterbacks that the NFL didn't want, right? For a long time, it was black quarterbacks. For a long time, it was short quarterbacks or more mobile quarterbacks, right? That's no longer the case. Those players are playing and starting and becoming stars in the NFL now. And the CFL doesn't have them at their disposal. So unless you find the niche that the NFL is not looking at, and frankly, I'm not a smart enough guy when it comes to the QB position to know what that is yet, but somebody's got to find it. You're just going to end up with sort of the second-rate guys instead of finding the ones that the NFL missed on and should have given a shot to.
I'm just realizing there are five quarterbacks who have played due to injury of the guy ahead of him. In total, it is six backups who have played, because Chris Trevler should count for this total as well. So our math is a little bit off. Six teams, two-thirds of the league, have had a backup in.
Well,
here's my solution.
Double.
One, well, Ottawa's had two different teams, yes, or two different quarterbacks play. So it's six teams, seven quarterbacks. If you count Chase Bryce, who has played a little bit but hasn't started, the number gets even bigger. It is wild. Here's an easy solution, JC, which again, I want to preface this by saying the league will never do for reasons that will become very obvious very quickly. But if you want fewer backups to play, you just have to shorten the season. Right. If this is a 12-game regular season, you can't just cough up a week three game because your starter is banged up. And let's look across the league. Like, whether it's Trevor Harris fully practiced on Thursday, but didn't play on Saturday. Drew Brown has been limited in practice for weeks now. Chad Kelly maybe had a setback. The reason I say maybe is because he's been limited the first several weeks. This past week was actually a DNP, did not participate. So I don't know if he's had a setback or not. That is speculation on my part, but it was odd to see him go from limited to do not participate. Nathan Rourke has been like close to playing. Like he was a game time decision week three, yet sat out week four. Like the point I'm illustrating is that a lot of guys are kind of borderline to play. Like they're certainly not 100%. But I think a lot of CFL teams are taking the cautionary approach, which I think is smart, right? I have failed on this very show saying if it's June or if it's July, why not wait until your starter is back to 100%? Because everybody right now is pretty close in the standings. What's going to matter a lot is that your starter is healthy come the end of the season. It's not nearly as important at the beginning of the season. Well, if the CFL season started on July 1st and the Grey Cup was late October, much more of a sprint than a marathon, you're not coughing up games in the first 4 weeks of the season saying, ah, whatever, we'll catch it later on. No, you're playing your guy come hell or high water because you cannot afford to not have your starter in there. And that's something I think we see a lot more in the NFL where starters will play even when they are visibly banged up simply because you cannot afford to miss out on a single game in that league. So the CFL will never shorten its schedule because that would mean less revenue, right? And it would mean paying the players the same amount of money for considerably less work. So I'm not suggesting that this is a solution that the CFL should do. I'm just saying that one of the byproducts of having an 18-game season in a league with only nine teams is some of these early season matchups, especially the interdivisional matchups, are just not – I'm not saying they don't matter. I'm not saying they're not important, but they're not nearly as important as the big games late in the season where it's like, okay, this week we got to put our hand in the dirt. If we get the win, we finish second, we get our home playoff game. It's not like that in June where you're going, you know what? It's only week three. Our guy is 92%. We think he'll be 97% next week. Could he play this week? Yeah, but let's sit him. And you know what? Why don't we just sit him both weeks? We'll give our backup a shot. And that way, when he comes back in 3 weeks, our starter will be 100%. I think that's the mentality that a lot of CFL teams are taking. And I think that that is unavoidable as long as we have these long, long regular seasons that I know CFL fans love. The owners certainly love. They have more time to make money. But I think it's inevitable that with a long season, you are going to have very passive decision-making when it comes to the health of your most important player.
I don't think you're wrong, Hodge, but ultimately it's never going to happen for revenue reasons. And as much as a shorter season might actually be better for player safety reasons, right? Less wear and tear on the guys. I think you see with the NFL trying to expand its season further, a lot of the narrative around that or the concerns around that have to do with putting more wear and tear on players' bodies. And the CFL is already up to that stage with 18 games. But the flip side of that is I don't think in this modern day and age, Hodge, you want to create a circumstance where you're going back to sort of the old school approach from, you know, a time long before I was born when, you know, guys were, you know, tearing muscles off the bone or breaking limbs. And they're saying, okay, here's a shot of Toradol and 12 Vicodin. We'll say a prayer for your liver. Go out there anyway, right? Like, we don't want that. Nobody wants to see players who are legitimately hurt and injured go out there and further put themselves at risk for what, let's be frank, is good money in the CFL, but not life-changing money, right? These guys need their bodies for the rest of their lives as well. I think it's fine for teams to be cautious with their players. I think in a lot of ways, as much as we want to gripe about toughness sometimes in this day and age and what we've lost, it's good that we are protecting players and being more cautious and being more aware about their bodies. So I don't think you want to create a situation where you're throwing that out the window and you're shoving these guys in. Give them an extra week. The solution has to be finding better backup quarterbacks or creating a development or a practice system where backup quarterbacks are getting more time to get into rhythm and to not be so rusty when they come into these games.
Yeah, I think more reps for backups is a good solution. And I, by the way, I agree with what you said a little bit earlier on, JC, which is blaming the Canadian offensive linemen. Canadians don't really play tackle in this league. And when they do, they are always better than the worst American tackles. In some cases, they're the best tackles, right? Chris Van Zyl was a great example of a Canadian guy who was arguably the top tackle in the CFL for a number of years. So I don't particularly see that as an issue. Could the O-line play get better in the CFL? Of course. I don't think anyone's denying that. But the NFL is also dying for quality offensive linemen. Like, there's just not that many human beings on this earth who have the combination of size and athleticism to be effective offensive linemen. So I do think that that is not just a concern here. It's a concern down there too. And there's a reason. I've had this conversation, by the way, with many CFL personnel people who will say, well, the American offensive linemen who make it up here are just limited, right? And that's why so many of the American offensive linemen who've had success in the last few years in the CFL, Dejon Allen being a perfect example, the guy's actually out, it appears, long-term with the BC Lions. He won most outstanding offensive lineman in 2023. And the reason he was in the CFL to begin with is because he's like 6'2 and a half, right? Like, he's not that tall. And when you get NFL castoffs, yeah, you get guys who are 6'7", 6'8", but by and large, they can't move. Dejon Allen can move very well, but he's not 6'7", 6'8", right? So you're kind of picking your poison as a CFL team. Do we take the mobile blocker who's active with his feet and his hands, but is by most definitions small? Or do we take the behemoth blocker who maybe can't move his feet very well, or maybe will be late with his punch just because he's not that agile? That is a situation that I don't think you can fix if you're the CFL. By definition, if a guy is 6'8" and can move like the wind, he is never going to not be in the NFL. So it's a tricky situation.
And it's not even that they're 6'8" and they can move like the wind. I always draw back on a conversation I had with a CFL scout a few years back at the College Gridiron Showcase, and we were watching the offensive line one-on-one reps, and there was this one tackle who was, again, 6'8", big body guy, big school, former starter, and he was getting beat on every single rep, Hodge. It was as ugly as I've ever seen it. He could not land a block to save his life. And I looked at the scout and I said, "What do you think?" He said, "Yeah, he's terrible. He's going to probably play 5 years in the NFL." And sure enough, he's still under contract with an NFL team to this day because there is such a dearth of big, long offensive tackles that they'll stick those guys on practice rosters, even if they're not good enough. So the CFL has had to look for those shorter guys as you leg out. I've never seen so many guards, American guards, get signed in the CFL as I have in the last number of years, because they're taking guys who are smaller body guards, don't quite meet the NFL requirements, but have good enough feet to play tackle, and trying to make them into tackles at the CFL level versus taking somebody who's truly excelled at tackle at the collegiate level and keeping them there in the CFL, because there's just not enough of those guys right now available out there on the market. It's a problem across football leagues. It's something that I think gets worse just because of the modern practice rules and the lack of reps we see from offensive linemen in practice, or full contact reps, because it's maybe the one position where you can't effectively simulate the game when it's not full contact. And ultimately, it does result in more quarterback injuries, and we've seen that on both sides of the border. But it's not about nationality. It's just there's not enough of these guys out there.
And it's ironic, especially because coming up through the draft, so many Canadian offensive linemen, especially from the U Sports level, it's like, okay, you've always played tackle because you've always been the best offensive lineman on your team, but now you're going to learn guard. And that's going to take a while, and it's going to feel weird. And then, yes, they're signing American guards and centers from the NCAA ranks and saying, all right, you've never played tackle before, but we're going to have you play tackle. That's one of the reasons I love what the Riders have done, which is playing Daniel Johnson at his true position, which is tackle, and moving the Americans inside with Jacob Brammer and Travion Tate playing guard. That's been a really, really good offensive line as of late. And I think part of the reason is they're just asking guys to do what they always do, right? What they usually do, what they're comfortable with. They're not asking anybody to move or do something that is beyond what they are typically used to, which I think is great. The other thing that I think is an issue, and Mike O'Shea brought this up in a media availability not too long ago, is he was talking about the good old days of the CFL. And it's true. If you look it up, if you go back 25 years, there were only 36 players on a roster. And what that meant was it was impossible to rotate personnel. Like, you just simply didn't have enough players. Well, in today's day and age, a lot of teams only dress 6 offensive linemen, and obviously you're not rotating anybody, and you might have your 6th guy play some tight end reps or even some fullback reps, but by and large, it's the same 5 playing every snap. Whereas on the defensive side of the ball, it's very common in the CFL now to dress 9 or 10 defensive linemen. And lo and behold, what that means is late in games, you've got tired offensive linemen playing fresh defensive linemen who are then late in games able to pin their ears back in obvious passing situations, knowing, hey, we're up by 10 points. There's only 8 minutes left. We know the offense is going to throw it. So I, having only played 16 snaps today, I'm going to pin my ears back and try to beat this tackle who, guess what, is tired because it's 31 degrees and he's played 52 snaps so far. And then we're all surprised when the defensive lineman wins the rep. And I don't think that's particularly fair. Now, I don't want the CFL to create a rule that says defensive linemen can't rotate. I don't want the CFL to shorten roster sizes and say, oh, we're going back to 35 players, because for many reasons, that was obviously not the best situation for anybody. But I think that is all, or those are all contributing factors into why we are in the boat that we're in right now, which is defensive linemen winning maybe more than fans would like them to win, and obviously potentially causing injuries that come along with that. So I think I agree that there is at least somewhat of a problem here. How do you fix it? I have no idea. And again, I think pretty much all the problems we've laid out are problems in other leagues, right? The quarterbacking across the UFL is not good enough. The quarterbacking across the NFL isn't really good enough. Yes, there are amazing elite quarterbacks who do great things. I'm not suggesting there's not. But like, is the 25th best quarterback in the NFL blowing the doors off? The answer is no, not even close, which is why when you have an average quarterback, you pay him $55 million a year so that he never leaves, right? So I don't know what the solution is. But yes, I think the quarterbacking in the CFL could be better. I'd like it to be better. I think everybody would. And I think it will get better once these starters come back in the lineup. It's now time for Hodges' Heritage Moment. On this day in 2012, Ricky Ray made his return to Edmonton following an off-season trade to the Toronto Argonauts. Edmonton prevailed by a score of 19-15. What an odd CFL score. Though Ray outdueled quarterback Stephen Giles by throwing for 298 yards and 1 touchdown, Toronto would finish the season 9-9 before capturing the Grey Cup at home with a 35-22 win over Calgary, while Edmonton missed the playoffs at 7-11. JC, I think we all know that the Toronto Argonauts won the Ricky Ray trade, but did you remember that they actually won the Ricky Ray return game?
You know, I didn't remember that, and it's strange because this was a seminal moment for my childhood. I can vividly remember the day that Ray was traded and reading the newspaper and being utterly devastated that my favorite player on my favorite team had just been shipped out of town for basically nothing. But I did not remember that the Elks ultimately won, or Edmonton ultimately won that game, although I do think it's a little obvious to say that Ray outdueled quarterback Stephen Giles, because I don't think Stephen Giles really outdueled anybody during his CFL career, with all due respect to what he was able to accomplish.
Ouch. I'm going to look it up because I remember this distinctly. Stephen Giles, there was one year where his touchdown to interception ratio was absolutely ridiculous. And I mean that in a positive, in a very good way. He in 20, maybe I'm misremembering. He had in 2010 with Winnipeg, he had 19 touchdowns and 7 picks. which is not like insane, but it's very good, which is why they were able to trade him for, I think it was a first round pick to Toronto, and then he was subsequently traded to Edmonton. But 19-7, that's legit. He must have outdueled some quarterbacks, JC.
Maybe. I at the time, I didn't think he was very good. I still don't think he was very good. Maybe it's just my poor, broken 12-year-old heart that hasn't been able to get over it. I was a little older than 12 at this point, but yeah. My 14-year-old heart.
Let's go to the three-minute drill. ESPN personality Pat McAfee was shook that Team Canada beat Team USA in a flag football friendly. Were you surprised Canada got the win?
I was pleasantly surprised, right? This is basically a meaningless game, a friendly, an international tournament, a tune-up game, and I don't know what the Americans had on the field in terms of whether it was their starters, their development team, whatever it may have been. But this is a big first step for Paul Lapalisse's squad in their quest to qualify for the Olympic Games in 2028 to prove that they can beat the best. Very, very good sign for Team Canada. The Stampeders have signed linebacker Kyle Wilson after his release from the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Is that a smart addition?
Yeah, I think it is. I think Wilson got pushed out by Devin Varisuk, second overall pick in this year's draft. I think the Ticats want to go Canadian in their linebacking core. I still think he's a good player, and the Stamps have been desperate to fill that linebacking core. They've been really, really beaten up with injury. Argonauts general manager Mike Pinball Clemens and his wife Diana have been awarded the Meritorious Service Medal by the Governor General of Canada. How cool is that?
It's very cool, and I believe you had a little bit of a typo there, Hodge. It's Diane, I believe. Diane Clemens.
Oh, my apologies,
who was,
Diane.
Honored for her work with the Pinball Clemens Foundation. They do excellent stuff in Toronto and abroad. Could not think of two more deserving people to get this award. After previously suggesting Chad Kelly might return in Week 4, Ryan Dinwiddie has ruled out the veteran QB until Week 7. What changed, Hodge?
Yeah, I don't know what changed. I know that the Argonauts are on a short week going into Week 5. They played Sunday night. They will play Friday against Hamilton, and then they have a bye in Week 6. So maybe this is Dinwiddie just reading between the tea leaves and saying, look, we got a short week, then a bye. We may as well hold on for Chad Kelly to play until Week 7. But again, this speaks to what I was talking about earlier, which is that teams are being very cautious early in the season with quarterback injuries. Again, I'm not saying it's not a good strategy. I think it is a good strategy, but there's a reason why we're seeing so many backups this time of year. The CFL is partnering with Drake for merchandise? What? How did that come about?
Well, they're partnering with Drake's clothing brand, October's very own, for a merchandise line. Basically, every other major professional sports league in North America, as well as college sports teams, have partnered with this brand to do a merchandising line. The CFL is now joining that. How actively involved Drake will be, I don't know. But just to be associated with a brand that has this level of cool factor with the younger generation, I think is an exceptional move by the Canadian Football League. Corey Mace was not happy with Saskatchewan's discipline issues in week four, calling them, quote, BS. Do the Riders need to get their penalties cleaned up?
Yes, they do. I don't think their penalties are super egregious. I don't think their discipline is atrocious. But this is something that has been an issue for this team, even dating back to Craig Dickinson's tenure. If they are going to be a championship team, they have to clean this up to at least some extent. They do. The CFL fined 8 players after Week 3, including Toronto Argonauts defensive lineman Jordan Williams, for his high hit on Trevor Harris. Is that the highest number of fines you've ever seen in the same week?
I think it is, Hodge, and I generally have to write these articles every single week. I don't know that I've ever seen a number even close to this. Generally, it's capped out at 4, maybe 5 at most. All of these were deserving of fines, though, and I'm glad to see the CFL is laying down the law early in the season so that trouble doesn't persist later on. Sunday's game between Toronto and Ottawa saw Ryan Hunter catch a touchdown pass and Darta Lee hit a spinorama on a fumble recovery. Was that the best big man game in CFL history, Hodge?
I think the big man could have done a better job blocking, but if we're talking about running the ball, if we're talking about catching the ball, this could very well be the number one big man game in CFL history. The spinorama was absolutely electric, fighting through contact. You got to give respect. Every offensive lineman's dream, right, is to pick up that football and make a play. Dartley absolutely did that. And then you've got Ryan Hunter on the tutty. Like, that was a sick play design from Ryan Dinwiddie.
The headstand or the attempt at one.
Unbelievable. Yeah, how does a 300-pound man do that? I don't know. But credit to Ryan Hunter. What a play from him. And what a play from Lee. That was honestly what made the game. Well, we also had Derek Sluka, which we'll talk about in a second. But that was what made that game watchable. Bo Levi Mitchell became the fastest quarterback in CFL history to reach 100 wins, needing 142 games. How impressive is that?
It's incredibly impressive, and kudos to Bo on this accomplishment. From basically the moment he stepped into the league, we knew he was different. He has proven that time and time again. But how about a little respect on Ronnie Lancaster's name? I did not know that he had the fastest to 100 wins mark prior to Bo at 149 games. In that era, that's pretty impressive. Argonauts defensive back Derek Sluka scored two touchdowns on Sunday, one on a 105-yard fumble recovery and one on a 120-yard missed field goal return, or I should say blocked field goal return. Is he the early front runner for most outstanding rookie?
I think he has to be, right? I mean, this is a young guy out of D3 Ithaca College, which, no disrespect to Ithaca College, is not known for churning out professional football stars. Well, after only a month of play, Derek Sluka has become almost a household name. Like, that performance with the two touchdowns, one of the longest fumble return touchdowns in CFL history, and then a 120-yard return, people will be talking about that performance for years. And I think that's whether or not Derek Sluka continues to have the success or not. Like, if he got cut tomorrow, people would still go, remember that random game where that guy in Toronto scored two crazy touchdowns? What was his name again? What was it? Duca? Puka, what was it? Sluk? Oh, Sluk. Yeah, that's right. He went to that school. What was it? He was D3. What was it? Like, people will be talking about this years later. And I don't think, for the record, he's going to fade away. I think Derek Sluka seems primed with all he can do as a DB, as a receiver, as a returner, as a teamer. Absolutely. Like, let's get this guy on all sides of the ball. With the CFL's limited roster sizes, albeit much larger than they used to be, the more you can do, the better. And he's certainly a guy who can do it all. We thank you, as always, for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. For JC Abbott, I'm John Hodge. Enjoy week 5 in the Canadian Football League, and join us on Wednesday for my picks and JC's picks for Three Down Nation. We'll see you then.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait. You mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's Upwork.com, Upwork.com.